Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to another Wednesday afternoon. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. We are doing our 72nd episode, I think, and this is the Christopher Nolan classic, Inception. We have been waiting to do this movie for months and months and months, and you guys have been egging us on to do it. We have an awesome guest. Hang out with us. We'll see you in just a second.
Featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Wow, this is exciting.
Oh, wow, that's fun, guys.
I feel like we're in a Michael Bay movie.
Woo! Yeah.
This is very exciting.
It's exciting from the opening frame.
I feel like I'm on a ship and I'm going like really fast.
Yeah.
If you move your arms, it feels like you're running incredibly fast pace, Harry.
I feel like there should be a voiceover like, this is the most important day of your life.
But we're just here talking Interstellar, everybody.
No, it's not Interstellar.
Actually, no.
Oh, right.
Andrew
but
has
that
struck.
Was a great joke.
Guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie-related. And this
yes.
is Action Movie Anatomy. I'm your host, Ben Bateman, joined today by an excellent co-host and a wonderful guest, Mr. Andrew Guy.
Woo!
You get that?
I'll give you a good clap. That's too loud.
And Miss Rachel Brooks Smith.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Woo!
She gets like a rainbow
right.
down. I'm here every week. She's never here.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited to be here. I've wanted to be here for a very long time.
Did we mention that Rachel Brooks Smith is an actress, a model, a clothing designer? She's been in Iron Man 2, The Nice Guys, all these movies that we love, that we talk about, and she's here to talk about Inception, one of her favorites, with all of us. So thank you for coming.
Yes, and I'm so excited. And you're right, Inception is like, oh, favorite. So
yeah.
Funny because people have been wanting us to do this on the show for a really, really long time. Mm-hmm. And they talk about it every week in the chat. They've been hounding us for it. And Ben and I have always kind of been on the fence.
Why?
We weren't sure if it was an action movie enough. If it was enough action or if it was like too drama heavy.
Right.
Or more of like adventure.
Okay.
But this is a straight up action movie. It really is.
I still think because of the length and the fact that there's very little action for the first like hour 20, mm-hmm. it's still, I would say it's more of a heist movie than an action movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
But it is like, it does have all the stuff, with like the snow and the explosions. Like that's all very action heavy. There's all the amazing
the feel.
Stuff.
Yeah, it's just like definitely. The feel, even when they're in all their dream sequences, is like, you're on the edge of your seat the whole time.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, this movie's incredible. I mean, it was nominated for Best Picture, which is like, I think pretty rare for like sort of heady sci-fi movies like this.
Yes.
Definitely. Well, I think Nolan is brilliant at being able to describe something enough for everyone that needs the justification, whilst not being too heavy-handed so that people that don't care about it can just sit back and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Absolutely. So, guys, we cover action movies on the show here, and those action movies usually adhere to four basic rules, aside from being made after 1981, which is kind of like a soft rule. We don't really stick to it all the time, though we have. We just don't choose that we necessarily need to. Rule number one is that the hero is always the smartest. The hero always plays by their own rules. 70 episodes, and I get it wrong.
It's a tough show, guys.
The hero always plays by their own rules. I guess Cobb is the hero, kind of.
Yeah, and he definitely plays by his own rules.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't even tell people that they're going to die or go to limbo if they die, or that his wife is just going to show up every time that he's creating a dream.
You know who would have been incredible in Cobb's role? Cruise would have killed this movie. I mean, like, I know if you guys watch or listen to this show that you, like, know 100% how much we love Tom Cruise. But
are we 5 minutes in?
Yeah. I know, like,
drop
five
a Tom
minutes.
Cruise reference? No, I was just thinking about it. Like, he would have nailed it. Like, it would have been perfect. This is such a Cruise type. It's so intense. It's so dramatic.
Yeah.
Okay, but Leo did a great job.
Yeah, he did.
Like,
he did.
Leo, we love
unbelievable.
Leo.
Unbelievable.
And Nolan and Emma were he was the only person that they considered at all.
Yeah.
So, two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. Who's the villain?
Time. No, that's no.
Marianne Cotillard?
I guess she is.
I mean, kind of, yeah. It kind of goes back and forth.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so interesting about this film is that, you know, Christopher Nolan always does that. He kind of like bends the rules a little bit. And
right.
I love that.
I mean, I guess that sort of makes Cobb the hero and the villain because she's a manifestation of his mind.
Exactly.
So, but I think for the purposes of our story, she is the villain. So I think you can say that definitely applies. The movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. He is a mercenary.
He's a mercenary. Mm-hmm. He's a hired inceptioner.
Inceptioner. And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. There's actually quite a few in there.
Yeah, some great explosions.
Yeah.
Which one's your favorite?
Of the explosions?
Yeah.
I think probably when Hardy pulls out the grenade launcher, it's pretty sweet.
You mustn't dream. What is it? You mustn't fear to dream a little bigger, darling.
Yeah,
that was a great voice. Good job.
Bad, right? He's not good.
I think mine is the elevator one because I'm like, how do I make you drop without gravity.
Yeah, it's right.
Like, how do you do this?
So holy shit. Great.
Yeah, that seems pretty epic. So, guys, those are the rules that we generally try to stick to with the show. Of course, leave us ratings and reviews on iTunes that help us stay high in the standings and provide free content, which we like to do. We will continue to provide to do. If you guys help us out with that and leave your thoughts below on YouTube, we're going to do the AMA question of the day later in the show, which we always ask you guys on Twitter what you think we should talk about, kind of like a debate subject, so we have that hidden. And if you guys want to follow any one of us or the show on Twitter to follow along, the show's at AMA Podcast. I'm Ben Bateman Media.
You can find me at Andrew Guy.
Rachel Brooks Smith at on Twitter, or where are we at?
Wherever you want.
Wherever you want. Okay, just go to rachelbsmith.com. You'll find it all.
It's a lot easier to find her on the internet than it is to find me, if that makes any sense.
There are a lot of fake ones.
Look,
I've
got 200 Twitter followers, guys. It's intimidating.
So yeah, that's pretty much that, guys. Let's get into it. We're gonna queue up the trailer right now for Inception. Yes. Watch that together, and then we'll move on with the thesis statement.
This is a good trailer.
It's a sweet one, yeah.
It's not as close, or it's not as good as The Dark Knight 2 or Interstellar 2, but
right,
it's very good.
But it's still good, and it has the...
I'll do the bombs, don't worry.
I just have to say, you guys
something
are so fun.
Know about
this is awesome.
I specialize in a very specific type of security. Subconscious security.
Are you talking about dreams?
Yeah.
Yes!
Woo! So good.
Mr. Cobb has a job offer he would like to discuss with you.
What kind of work placement?
I actually love Ellen Page in this movie.
Oh,
I'm not really a big fan of her.
And yeah, Michael Caine.
We create the world of the dream.
That was my favorite. I was like,
we bring the subject into that dream, and they fill it with their secrets.
Then you break in and steal it.
Well, it's not strictly speaking legal.
I remember like the trailer Inception. The first time you saw it, so you were watching like people just floating in the air and rooms rotating, like holy shit, what is happening?
I think I found a way home. And this last job, that's how I get there. Dreams feel real while we're in them. It's only when we wake up that we realize something is actually strange.
This is your responsibility. You're not prepared for this.
I love that exchange. Yeah. It's like, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Calm down. Yeah. Oh, so good.
Dreams collapsing.
I have it under control. I need to see out of control.
Yeah, this movie's sick.
I want to go watch it again.
Me too. I was just like, I was like,
must be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling.
There you are.
Yeah.
So good.
It's like, just so sweet.
It's crazy. 6 years ago already.
Yeah.
I can't believe that movie came out 6 years ago. I remember distinctly watching it in theaters. Like,
yeah.
It's also one of those movies that, because it is like the sci-fi genre and it has that action thing, there was a swing back in terms of people actually being willing to give it credit as like a true masterpiece.
Right.
It's like the next few years were filled with a lot of people sort of just being like, well, yeah, that movie's like pretty good, but it's just sort of a, you know, it's like just borrows a lot of concepts from other sci-fi. And then like looking back on it, you're like, yeah, actually this movie's just amazing.
Just it's really good.
When people try to discredit anyone for borrowing anything from any point in time,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, what are you talking about? Look at the Kubricks and Spielbergs and Andersons and Aronofskys and Tarantinos of the world. That's what makes them brilliant.
Yeah.
You got to pull from things that work.
Yeah, it's classic. So, guys, we're going to jump into the next part of the show. It's just thesis statement. This is that part of the show where you have something, a big, bold thought, something strong that you've prepared. It's kind of almost like rooted in hyperbole. Your biggest feeling about the movie that you're going to kind of stick to the rest of the show. It shouldn't be soft. It shouldn't be this is my favorite this or there's a great scene in this. It's this is the first this, the greatest this, something like that. So we kind of stick with that, and I'm going to jump in first and say that right off the bat, this is Christopher Nolan's greatest film, period. And I was on the fence because I like some of his movies a lot. I mean, I like a lot of his movies a lot. I think he's got 9 movies. 7 of them are in the IMDb top 250.
Yep.
And
2 of them are in the top 15.
Really?
Yeah.
Dark Knight and
this. Dark Knight.
Wow, I didn't notice this was that high. And I just, when I watched it again, I was like, this is just a brilliant movie. It takes so many of the things that made Dark Knight a successful film, so many things that make his sort of like You know, he does that thing in his action sequences where he, it's like he's showing you a montage of scenes without actually a montage. It's like quick cut, you see a guy, you know, it's like Joseph Gordon-Levitt like arranging something to set up a dream mm-hmm. state while DiCaprio's talking to Ellen Page in a different scene. And you kind of, you get like him doing yep. his whole motion without actually saying anything as part of a different scene. So it's almost like he's moving the plot forward, he's showing you what's happening, and it, I don't know, it's this, it's like swift style of editing that Nolan uses a lot in Dark Knight, a lot in,
so good.
In Rises, yeah. and it's a ton in this movie.
Yeah, and you know what, I'm going to piggyback on that because it's basically, I have basically the same thesis, and that's yeah. that this is Christopher Nolan's masterpiece. The Following and this movie are the only two movies up until this point that he'd done that were just strictly his creation. Mm. Had no other influence or inspiration or anything. And then I want to talk about his editing because the final part of this film,
yeah.
where they're layering the three levels of the dream,
yeah.
oh my is gosh.
One of the most brilliant pieces of editing and storytelling I've ever seen, ever. It might be.
As you're seeing the car the fall.
Yeah.
It's so
yeah.
good.
It's like the car's falling in slow motion, so it puts you in that... you buy in 100%. You're yeah. like, this takes 20 seconds, so this is going to take a week, and this is going to take, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
you're like, I'm in.
There's no gravity in yeah. the JGL version of the world. You have the song playing in the snow world.
It's just
so
perfect.
Good. I mean, I completely agree with you guys, and that's exactly what mine was as well.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think it's so difficult to be able, like, our mind is so complicated, and to be able to show that visually, I think that's what he was able to do in this film.
Yeah.
And I know how we were talking about earlier, like, who's the villain, who's the hero. I think he brings up such a great point of, like, we can be that for ourselves every day. Like,
right.
you can either be your own villain or your own hero, and it's like, what choice are you going to make? Like, who are you going to choose to
right.
believe about yourself? So, heck yeah, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Yeah, I mean, like, imagine trying to explain to your friend the end of Inception.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so it's really crazy. There's these three different dream worlds. It's impossible. And then he just made that into a movie and told it perfectly.
So, piggybacking off the idea that we each have the exact same greatest Nolan film, do you want to just do, like, a quick top three? What's the top three Nolan films?
Okay.
I can say
I feel
mine.
Like we're all starting at the same point. It's kind of interesting.
Right. Yeah, we might as well just jump right into that.
Yeah, I think... I mean, I'll go Inception first, and I'll say that my second, because it's a close second,
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult to argue that Dark Knight's not his greatest film. But the reason Dark Knight's not is because it is derived from a former medium, which is...
Yes, it's not his own.
It's right. not his own yeah. story. It's the best Batman story. So much of that comes from how great of a performance Ledger gives as Joker.
Yes.
But I do think that a lot of the stuff with Aaron Eckhart as Two-Face, there's probably 25 minutes, 30 minutes of fat in that movie
yeah.
that makes it a little longer than it needs to mm-hmm. be. And just some of the stuff is just kind of like, it's not like this movie where it feels complete.
It ends, I mean, the ending of this movie is brilliant, and it yeah. ends yeah. like in perfect timing.
So I think this one too, like I just was thinking about it, like there wasn't one part of it that I ever checked out. Like I was literally like this
the whole time. Yeah.
And I think especially as, you know, as a filmmaker, any film that you're in where you never, because a lot of times you watch a movie and I'm like, what? Oh, I wonder how they lit that shot or how they got this. And I
right.
go into like filmmaking mode rather than
right.
like viewer mode and experience mode. And it was like, I was just sucked in. And anytime that happens, I'm like, okay, this is an amazing film.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So yeah, Dark Knight's my number two. And then Prestige, which is just like almost my number one.
Do you know that I just saw that for the first time this last year?
Really?
Yes.
It's one of those ones that I had missed so many times. I missed The Illusionist and The Prestige.
Because
they came out
so
at like the
good.
Same time. And
so
I was like,
good.
Fuck them. I'm not going to watch them.
And The Illusionist gets written off for what it is, which
exactly.
is pretty mediocre, whereas The Prestige is a fucking masterpiece.
So
right, so
good.
I think I kept getting confused about which one was the one to write off, and
yeah.
I had like such a crush on Edward Norton. I still do. I think he's phenomenal. But I finally watched it this last year, and it was so
That's where I always
good.
Steal my Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
No! No! It's from that movie!
I know. Okay, so
yeah.
what is your...
Honestly,
so Inception's one of them.
Yeah, it's same thing. Like
Dark
literally,
Prestige?
We just it's exactly that. I think it's just the order is really difficult for me because I love Prestige, like love.
Yeah.
You know, along with that too, I think a similar movie that, or not similar, but you know, the Now You See Me movies.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about those?
I actually didn't see either one of them.
I haven't
seen
them.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Do you
Another
like them?
Another one to do. I like the first one a lot. I haven't seen the second one, but it was just I remember thinking like, it reminded me of like the idea, you know, obviously of Prestige, that kind of thing.
It was a weird cast. That was why
I think
I
it looks awesome.
Yeah.
Like visually.
I feel like you guys should
intriguing.
Definitely check it out. At least the first one. I can't say anything about the second, but first,
yeah,
I really liked it.
It's a good cast. It's just an odd group of characters. That's why I wasn't compelled to see it. I like all of them. All
right, personal endorsement right here.
Yes, here we go.
I think mine are going to have to be... It's very similar. It's Inception, Dark Knight, and Memento.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Memento's your three.
Memento's my three, because the first time I saw... There's very few movies that you really remember the first time you watch them and yep. how they affected you. Yeah. And I was watching it with my best friend at his beach house.
Yeah.
We were, like, just locked in the... It was raining, there was nothing to do, and we're like, well, we'll watch this movie. We watched it every day that we were there. We watched it three yeah. days in a row. Because yeah. the first time we watched it, we just looked at each other, yeah. and we didn't, like... We hadn't really experienced movies that made you do that yet.
Yeah, right.
Because when Memento probably... came out, and the time that I saw it, I was probably, what, like 10 or 12 or something like that?
12, yeah.
12, yeah.
Yeah.
No. There was nothing that I had seen ever like that had blown that major, my mind.
You know what
like
that movie was for me when I was younger? Was Contact.
Yeah.
Jodie Foster.
Contact is sweet. That movie's good.
I think still, like, I think any movie that yeah. makes you literally go...
Don't like Contact?
Not a fan.
Like, no. But that's good. I just think any movie that was my first... I mean, obviously, I was so young.
Yeah.
But that was the first movie when I was like, oh, I love movies.
Yeah, right.
That made me think and made me be like, whoa, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
there's so much more to this.
I saw Memento in theaters. My dad took me.
Your dad always
12.
Takes you to the coolest movies
yeah,
as a
saw
kid.
Yeah, some sweet movies as a kid, definitely.
The first movie that I saw like that with my mom in theaters was Gangs of New York.
It was Mulan, actually.
It was Mulan.
She taught me the song.
And we both cried. It was Gangs of New York, and after the opening scene in Gangs of New York, my mom was like, oh, I don't know if we should be here, because it's like that gnarly fight yeah. in the beginning. All right, anyway, I digress.
Anyway, that's going to be our top three Christopher Nolan yeah. films. We moved on from Thesis. Let's get into fist bump moment, guys. So fist bump moment is that moment in a movie when you're watching something. Something happens that you're just like, yes, this is so awesome. I get to watch the rest of this movie right now. You want to call your buddy and be like, are you watching this right now? Are you seeing this? Go to 17 minutes, 23 seconds and tell me when you're there, and then I'll
shut up,
push play at the same
up, listen.
Time. And he's like, I'm eating dinner with my girlfriend. You're like, I don't care. Put it on. So that's fist pump moment. It can be anything. It can be a favorite line, or it can be a headshot to a character, music, an explosion, mm-hmm. anything, a touching look between a father and a son, anything at all. So go ahead.
Let's start over on this
yeah,
side.
Yeah, I think
table.
Let's start with me. I will have to say that moment that Leo and Emma are sitting at the cafe, and it's the first time when she like kind of is like, what's going on? And
yeah.
just the whole thing just lifts. I just think that was a moment that I was like, you know, and if I remember correctly, that is the first time when you see something that's like, I don't know that I've ever seen that on
yeah.
film before.
Yeah.
And that, and I mean, the very end. I love how it ends. I love leaving it open. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the argument. I love that it opens that up to this debate. Like, did it keep spinning? Did it not? Like, you know, I don't know. I just, I love that.
I think that's so brilliant because it makes you talk about a movie mm-hmm. after it's over forever.
Right.
Forever.
And that's what we want.
What's that song, You're So Vain?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, everyone wants to know who she's talking about in the song, You're So Vain.
Yeah.
And they wanted to say, you don't know that song? Come on, man. it's a great song.
It's in
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
That's her song and
Kate
movie.
Hudson,
my mother
Matthew
introduced
McConaughey.
Me to.
Look, we used to watch that film together. My fist pump moment, it's very similar. It's when you kind of buy into the world of the freight train coming down the middle of the street.
Yeah.
You're just sitting there and it's just like, boom, freight train. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You don't even know how to like take it in. And Leo's look, he just doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things. You've never seen it happen. And the only reason it's so powerful is because you're completely invested in the world that they've
yeah.
created.
Yep.
To where a train comes down the middle of the street and you're like, fuck yeah, that's exactly what should have happened.
Yeah, it's awesome that it's like that Matrix sort of feel where it's like you can just manifest things.
Yeah.
But it's also like there has to be an architect that's designed it. So like you can just put a train in the middle of a street. You know, it's like, or you can bend the world. And like,
yeah.
it's pretty cool. I mean, definitely. And the visuals, the fact that they accomplished so much of this almost entirely with practical effects. Most of it's not done with CGI.
Yeah, there's usually, what, like 2,000 CG hours of film?
Yeah,
and this one had like 500?
Less than 500, yeah.
It's amazing.
So most of that stuff is all...
I want to hear yours, because I do have one more.
Okay, yeah, so mine, it's weird, because it's not so much a moment that I'm like... It's more like a moment I'm like... And it's that scene when she pushes the basement in the elevator.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love the way that his memories are designed to be an elevator.
Yeah.
Like the different floors.
That's
and it's an
really cool.
Old elevator. And they get down to the bottom floor. And that look she gives when she
terrifying.
First turns. She is fucking terrifying.
She is horrifying.
So good in that movie.
Yeah.
Like just.
She should. Yeah, frightening. Like she's
and beautiful and like interesting all at the same time.
Oh yeah. Man, it's just so creepy. And she's like, "Do you know what it is to be someone's lover?" And you're like, "I don't even know who says that, but this is so creepy."
You like feel kind of dirty.
I'm so weirded out. And she picks up the fucking glass. Like that scene is just like, holy shit,
yeah.
this movie's intense, because it just takes you from like awesome sci-fi to like incredibly intense, frightening character.
Yeah, like real drama and horror. Mm-hmm. And so my other moment is, again, another one of those moments where the world starts changing and you've got to buy in. And it's that hallway scene with JGL.
Yes.
Reason why.
Marissa, can we cue it up? It's actually the scene that we have loaded up.
I love this. So the reason why.
I know a piece of it's in the trailer.
Thank you, Marissa.
Too.
The reason why this scene to me is so cool, it's not because of the world turning. It's because of Joseph Gordon's JGL's comfort in it.
Yeah. Mm.
He's so used to it, and he understands the physics of the fighting and all of that. It's
right.
So cool.
That is a great idea.
We can kind of just cue this up while we chat here. It's like the 2-minute scene of him like running through the hallways and all that. And so much of this is done practically as well.
You saw the machine that they use, the rotating hallway on this set.
I really wish this was still in theaters. I would go watch it right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would totally, I saw this movie in IMAX, actually.
Yeah, like you have to. Like, I don't think I watched this, I haven't watched this on TV before, but like, I would only want to watch it in the theater.
Yeah.
And you know, another one of the favorite things about Nolan for me is that not only does he work on movies that gross almost $1 billion, but he's still the guy that's like, no, we're going to do it my way.
Yeah.
You want to do it 3D? No, we're not going to do it 3D because it's going to take away the storytelling of Inception. And it totally would have.
Yeah, completely.
Yes, fight scene.
Yeah, see, again, it's this whole thing. It's like a montage, but not, you know?
Yeah, right.
Right, the way he's edited it.
He does a lot of it in Dark Knight as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a swift style of filmmaking. It accomplishes a lot with a
little. It was just such a smooth, it had nothing to do with it, but it just works
right.
The way that it goes. It's so great.
Yeah, and all the slow-mo. I mean, it took him like 10 years to get this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, all this stuff.
His comfort of running and jumping around is just
so
cool. Which he did all of, like, 90% of his own stunts in that hallway. All but one moment.
And they start to tumble, yeah. Yeah, this scene is epic, man.
Oh, so good.
That was it. Right there was when I turned and I just wrote it down on my phone.
Yeah. How do they do it where it's like a rotating hallway and they're running on the ceiling, I wonder?
Yeah, I would love to know. I want to go watch like the making of this part if they talk about it at all.
There's a huge outdoor structure.
Oh, it's Steven doing it, not Marissa. Hi, Steven.
Yeah, hey, guys. It was a huge outdoor structure that rotated as they filmed.
Yeah, I saw some of it.
Yeah, I just mean I wonder how they can, that like, without cutting, he goes from being on the floor to the wall to running upside down on the ceiling.
No, literally, it's a structure they're walking on. That's rotating.
So it's like they're having to keep moving as it's rotating along.
Yeah, they're actually moving with a rotating structure.
Got it.
I love it too. Did you guys see that?
So cool.
And done. Perfect. We can cut it.
Is this one of your favorites, Steven?
So good.
Definitely one of the top.
Yeah.
Steven Lemieux in the booth, people.
Yeah, Steven.
Executive producer, Popcorn Talk Network. How you doing, Steven?
Good to be here.
Excellent.
Very happy to have you.
Show, Rachel.
It's like the voice of the all-knowing.
He is.
Right now.
Steven is the voice of God. And
he is the all-knowing.
And we actually have to thank Steven for Rachel being on the show since he was the one that was like, you need to go talk to her. Because you were here for a different interview.
For a different show, yep.
And like, there's a girl. She's a badass. She's an actress. And she loves martial arts and dance.
Yeah.
Go talk to her.
Yeah.
Here we are.
And here it is.
Later.
Yeah, it was right after because I did the Atomic Shark movie that just came out. So I was talking about that when I got to do a lot of like my own. I always done my own stunts and everything. Like, I did the dance movie, a cheer movie. And
you know, let's pause for a second.
Sure.
Let's talk about Rachel for a minute since this is a good moment to pause. So, yeah, so you recently did Atomic Shark. You've got a new movie called Chalk It Up coming out.
That's out. That was so fun because I grew up a gymnast, and to get back in the gym again, and let me just tell you what it's like to be on a high beam after you haven't been on one for like 10 years. Like, it was just insane, and I have such respect for a gymnast. I mean, I did it hardcore all growing up, and I used to be able to do back handsprings and backflips on it, and now I'm like, yes, if I can do a handstand.
My sisters were all gymnasts growing up, and so we had the beam on the ground in our house like to practice on, and I would always like just try to walk. I couldn't even like walk from one end to the other, alone do flips and handsprings. And so what new movies do you have coming out, or are you working
on that
right
one
now?
Yeah, I have a new one, so that one just came out, and then Atomic Shark just came out as well, and I'm just so excited by people's responses to it. And it's one of the best ones that they've had, and they've gotten so much great, you know, reviews from it, and kind of already talking about maybe even a second and a third one.
And that's on Sci-Fi, right?
On Sci-Fi, yeah. And they keep replaying it and replaying and replaying it, which is awesome, meaning that people are liking it. And it was just so fun. We filmed it in Puerto Rico, and it was my first I'd been putting out there for a long time, like, action movies, action, action, action. Because that's really what I want to do, because I love and have this weird obsession with fighting and kicking ass. Like, I just, I love it so much. I think growing up a gymnast and then a dancer, you know, there's just something about that that translates really beautifully into, like, fighting and stuff like that. And I love pushing myself to the limits, and I love everything about what action films are, you know, and it's all about, like, overcoming these massive challenges in fun, you know, creative ways. And I always like to ask myself, you know, what movie am I writing today? Like, what kind of character am I writing myself into? And if I was in this awesome movie, wouldn't I want to write myself into the action hero character? And, like, how do they look at problems, and how do they view stuff? Because I'm pretty sure, like, Leonardo DiCaprio, like, can you imagine if you're watching him and all of a sudden he's just like, it gets too hard and he just runs in a room and cries.
He's like,
And you're like, I'm done. Like, I just think it's so inspiring just as people and in life to realize, you know, you have that same ability. It's just like the power of choice and intention.
Well, that's a big part of, I think, what your big, or your disruptive clothing brand is about. You always talk about, I mean, today you said, I wrote it down, is like being your own hero and your own villain, being your own inspiration every day. So with disruptive, like, what's the main message that you're trying to get across to the people that are buying and
thank you so much for asking that question. I think so much of why I started and why I'm so passionate about it is that I just love helping anybody that's open to it, like, get out of their own way, and myself included. And I think we, you know, we're habitual creatures, and it's so easy for us to create these thoughts and habits and patterns. And I think I just wanted to look at life and my day and realize that, okay, all the thoughts I'm thinking, the people I'm surrounding myself with, the things that I'm doing, are they actually helping me achieve my goals and dreams? And if they're not, like, how can I disrupt those thought patterns, disrupt those habits into ones that actually do, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, we know a lot about that.
Actually, Stephen, I pulled a screen grab from the website if you want to throw it up there as well.
You can at least see
the clothing brand, snapshot of it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's really so much about, and I'm launching some really cool stuff just of, like, the disruptive movement. Oh, that's actually a different one, but
not you.
Yeah, it's
baby.
Fine.
No, killing it.
It's totally fine.
Take that screen grab down. For those on audio, that was a joke. We didn't show the wrong thing.
Disruptiveapparel.com, and it's also going to be disruptive movement, because I'm just really passionate about creating this movement to just empower people to realize that you are writing your own story, your own movie every day, and, like, who are you writing yourself into? Yeah, so they all have different sayings on them that, you know, hopefully make you smile, but also make you think, you know, of, like, I don't work, I flow. It's like, is what I'm doing, like, how can I make my work feel like more like a fun flow? Or what can I do to, I think it's just the power of questions. It's conscious questioning. And I think that's what all action heroes are so good at, and what they exemplify is they don't just get stuck in this victim mindset of, like, oh, this sucks, this is too hard, I'm just going to run and hide. It's like, no, they're like, okay, this is what's going on. This sucks. It's super hard, but what can I do to make it better?
There's always a way out.
Yeah, there's always, and it starts with that power of questioning. And I think, I just think there's so much power in questions and asking the right questions. So that's really what I aspire to do. And yeah, I launched my ebook called The Disruptive Roadmap to Being Unbreakable. Because I used to talk about, you know, being unbreakable all the time, mainly because of my center stage story with very quickly. Basically, I quit gymnastics, broke my hand, had a really hard time because my whole life kind of flipped upside down during that time. And but I saw a movie. It was the first dance film I ever seen. Completely changed my life. It was that moment sitting in the theater where you're just like goosebumps, chills, everything. And I couldn't move. I couldn't leave that seat. So I was like, that's what I want to do with my life. I was so inspired by just that film. And very long story short, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of challenges along the way, people telling me that I was crazy for thinking that I could be successful as an actress, and me just keep fighting, keep watching. I kept watching that movie for inspiration, and when I felt homesick and lonely and scared and sad, and one day I saw a casting call on the wall for Center Stage 2, which is literally the sequel to that same movie, and you know, my heart dropped, almost didn't go, tried to justify all the reasons why I shouldn't go. And thank goodness I did, because I went in 6 times for that movie, but I ended up playing the lead in the sequel to the film that literally, you know, was my life-changing movie.
That's so crazy. That's unbelievable. So I'm going to be in Warrior 2.
Yes! Me too! Together!
Yes!
We'll do it together!
Boom!
Woo! That is an epic film, by the way. Warrior is, like, amazing.
One of our favorites.
Yeah. So, absolutely. And so a new commitment that I have to myself, too. I'm like, okay, I want to play the badass action hero girl. Like, I want to kick ass. And, you know, that same thing, like, Warrior would be epic.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, if I want that, what do I have to do? Who do I have to be right now to be there, like as if I'm already training for that movie. So I'm like starting hardcore. Like I just decided this the other day because I was like watching different interviews with different people. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to start training. Like it's already here. Like I'm just training for my next big action film. And
awesome.
It's just going to come. And I'll let it. You guys know when it comes out.
Yeah. And you'll come on the show for it, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. We will have it on AMA.
Yeah. And we'll do a full breakdown of the profile. So, let's talk about where these guys who are starring in this one came from.
Yes.
Their center stages, if you will.
Yes.
So we'll start with DiCaprio here. I think this is an interesting part of his career.
When I was pulling the numbers for the movies for this, it really was. This is kind of like a lull almost.
Yeah, it's weird. And DiCaprio, I think you could argue, is the biggest actor in the world. I mean,
yeah.
It's a toss up. There's three or four guys you can think of who kind of fit the bill for different reasons, but he has a strong case for being at least one of those guys, if not the guy.
Totally.
And he's been that guy for so long in different ways, right? So originally it's like Titanic, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, mm-hmm. This Boy's Life, Marvin's Room, all those movies prior to Titanic, and then Man in the Iron Mask. So then he gets massively famous, takes a break, comes back 4 or 5 years later, Catch Me If You Can, Gangs of New York.
Oh my gosh, Catch Me If You Can. That was so good.
And there's this feeling like, okay, so we can respect DiCaprio. He's actually a good actor. It's like the generation that watched Titanic, they were now in their late teens.
Right, it's like Titanic and Romeo and Juliet. Everyone just thought he was just like a heartthrob.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All the guys that had to listen to their like 11 and 12-year-old girls at school talking, everybody's like 18, 19 now. So it's like, oh, actually, these movies are pretty good. So then he does that for a few years. He starts to get on the Scorsese path, right, where he does, I think Aviator is just a few years after that.
It's this guy's in with Scorsese and Nolan.
Unbelievable. Blood Diamond. But then, weirdly enough, it's like he was like that guy for a second. Like mm-hmm. like I said, Aviator was a big one. Blood Diamond
was amazing.
Yeah, there's a handful of movies right around that are these huge, just centerpiece movies. But then for whatever weird reason, it's like, he kind of fell off a little bit. Not in terms of the movies weren't big. It's just like no one cared as much. Body of Lies was a flop. Revolutionary Road was Sam Mendes. It was hyped. Yeah. Kind of a flop. Shutter Island, people like that movie, but it's not referenced like these others. It's
people,
not like Wolf
like
of Wall
to,
Street.
People like to hate on that movie,
yeah,
even though I
totally.
Really liked
yeah,
that
it was
movie.
Really good.
I think he was just doing that thing of oversaturation. When you're the leading man and you are the biggest leading man in the world and you just see him in movie after movie after movie, it's even like when D-Day Lou does a movie like 2 years after his previous one, you're like, really?
Yeah.
You're doing another one?
Yeah.
You're going to do Nine, the musical that no one's going to watch and completely forget about? Okay, go
it's
ahead.
It's weird that movie happened.
It's really weird, but that's the same thing as like Body of Lies.
I mean, it's basically, I mean, he did Departed in 06. That one best picture.
Yes.
And then it's his next 4 years are sort of this like head scratcher.
It's really weird.
But then Inception's 2010 and pretty much the last five or six, it's been like he won his Oscar finally for Revenant, right? You've got
Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street, Inception.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess in there though, there's still a few because J. Edgar was kind of a flop.
Yeah.
So was Great Gatsby.
This is just so good. I feel like that one.
Yeah. I feel like Great Gatsby. I was like super resistant to watching it, and then it ended up on TV one day, and I was like, all right, I'll watch a few minutes of this. I sat down for the whole 2.5 hours, watched it from beginning to end.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, he's a fascinating actor. I mean, his career has been pretty diverse, and he's done more awesome things than most people we can think of. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love how even, you know, I think throughout all of that, I think he still is so humble, especially, you know, just at the last Oscars with winning Revenant. I mean, you're listening to some of his speeches and just who he is and personifies. It's like this very grounded, humble person that just loves and is passionate about filmmaking.
Yeah.
I think that's so beautiful. I could be completely wrong. I don't know him. But just what he gives off. And I think there's a lot of people that, you know, with all of his success and maybe ups and downs to his career could not be that way.
When he won that
Daryl
award, our good buddy was working at the Oscars and was it the SAG Awards that did it?
SAG.
It was SAG. He won the SAG Award and Daryl, when the question was like, hey, I just want to know what song was playing in your head when you found out you won the award.
Mm.
And he starts laughing and he's like, I'm going to think about that. I want to give you a real answer. And then afterwards, he walked up to Daryl in the press room. And he's like, hey, I wanted to talk to you for a second. It's a great question.
That.
And he told him, it was like, it's a perfect day. It was the song that was playing.
Oh, my gosh.
And that song was playing, thanks for asking. And I was like, wow, that's amazing.
He went out of his way.
See, that's like such a great character. Like, I love hearing that story. That makes me so happy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go Leo.
Daryl's also a boss, so.
Daryl is a badass, So you got Joseph Gordon-Levitt on the other hand here, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt has such an interesting career trajectory, path, whatever you want to call it, because, you know, he was very successful as a child actor on Third Rock from the Sun and other things that he did, and then he kind of, like, took a break, and then he came back, and I think we all as an audience were like, really? You're going to you're coming back. You're that kid, right? And then my favorite thing about him is that he's got this leading man, A-list quality and personality, yet he still does movies that no one's ever heard about.
Yeah.
And he loves doing these small indies. And so you look, he does G.I. Joe Rise of the Cobra, 2009.
Super funny that he would do that movie.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Then the next one is Hesher.
I've seen Hesher.
Which is good. Yeah. It's interesting.
It's a weird movie.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Kind of like Don John.
Yeah, it's a little black comedy.
And then the next one's Electrolux, which is a movie that like no one even knows about.
I never heard of it.
And he's like second build on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for him, people just know. People just know you put him in a role and he's going to do a great job.
Yeah.
And he just picks things that he wants to do.
I mean, Dark Knight Rises, Inception, mm-hmm. Looper. Those are all ones that jump out as like really, really like hits. Yeah. I didn't watch the Walk.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you guys see The Walk? I actually saw that on a plane. And there was definitely moments where I was like, wow, this is a really cool story. I mean, he always does an amazing job. I think regardless of whatever the actual film is, he is always an actor that I'm like, I believe you. Yeah. Every time.
You loved 50-50, right? It's like one of your favorite movies.
I love 50-50.
I love that movie.
Love it.
Yeah, it makes you cry every time.
Still never watched it.
Makes you cry every time.
Interrupt.
My mom actually and I would watch that as a kid.
I actually did watch that with my mom and she was like, yeah, it's okay.
I was like, no! What was the other one? He did like the 500 Days of Summer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's another. Like,
fucking great.
That was a big one.
Such a great movie.
That was
movie.
A big one for his career.
It really was. And it was so real.
It's like the best, it's like the best breakup movie ever made.
Do you know I've never really seen that movie?
500 Days?
I was working at Blockbuster when it came out.
Yeah.
And everyone was raging about it. And I just kind of was like, nah.
Yeah, I think it's just so real, you know? Like, it's so real.
In your breakup period, when you were living on my couch?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
That was the movie you should have watched.
Yeah, but instead I watched Warrior and got blackout drunk every night.
Well, in my breakup period, when I was living on Dave Mason's couch, I watched that movie. So
Warrior or 500?
Both.
Okay, that's enough about our sad lives. Let's move right on into production development.
This is why we love movies so much. Yeah,
right?
So, let's keep talking production development. So, it took 10 years for this movie to get made. The interesting thing about this here is that Nolan is basically the sole guy behind all of it.
Yeah.
He wrote the whole script. He and his wife are the only producers, mm-hmm. and he directed it, which is like, how can you do that with this movie?
Insane.
This movie is epic.
Well, it's like him and his brother work together so much that I think, in my mind, and for people that are kind of movie buffs but aren't like obsessed with Nolan, you just kind of assume that they work on everything together because everything they write is so just deep and intricate, mm-hmm. and confusing and so hard to explain. So like to think that one person could write this story is beyond me. I'm like, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And then it was just him and his wife that produced it. Like, usually on films like this you have a lot more producers.
Yeah, we talked about that, was it last week on the show?
How many producers there's normally involved in these things?
Yeah, and then there was just one, and that's why it was so crazy.
Yeah. I can't remember what the one that it was.
Was it Ronan?
I think it was Ronan, right? It was just... Yeah, is that my phone that's going crazy?
I think it is your phone.
Because I was trying to find if we were totally correct about the producer thing. Because I know that the two of them work on everything together, but it still sounds crazy that...
We'll have to check that out.
It's definitely on airplane mode, guys. I don't know why we're getting the buzzing. So in any case, it's amazing. He and his wife met actually back in college, and they would like screen movies to finance their projects together.
So cool.
Mm-hmm. They've been together forever. It's unbelievable. I mean, they've worked on so many things together. It's Christopher Nolan's 10 favorite movies. This is kind of an interesting one. Are 2001 Space Odyssey, The Black Hole, Blade Runner, Chinatown, The Hitcher, Lawrence of Arabia, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, The Man Who Would Be King, Top Copy from 1964.
Love Top Copy.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
I gotta go watch all these movies.
Right?
And he says, as well as anything by Stanley Kubrick. I think it's cool that this is an actual like thing that he named his 10
favorite movies. Yeah, that's awesome.
I couldn't do that. The gun to my head.
Yeah.
I'd be interested because I want to go now watch all these movies and see. I'm sure that this is where he pulls a lot of his inspiration from. So it's just really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he and his wife at the University College of London would screen movies, and she's produced every single one of his films.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
There was a run of three that he didn't produce, which is Insomnia, Memento, and I believe Batman Begins. And then he's been a producer on all the rest of them. And actually, recently, Nolan's actually gotten into production now as well. So he used to just be pretty much exclusively a director. Now he, like, Transcendence, he was a producer on, both the Man of Steel movie and Batman vs. Superman.
What did you guys think of Man of Steel?
I like Man of Steel a lot more than most people, I think.
I think Man of Steel is pretty mediocre, but the second trailer is phenomenal.
Yeah, but Batman vs. Superman, Ben and I were both appalled in the theater.
Pretty bad.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Why do you have?
Oh no, I'm just
opinions?
I'm just interested.
Just curious.
I'm just curious. Yeah. I think there's there's you can if you're really hardcore critic. I think there's a difference. Like if I have like critic hat on,
yeah.
I could obviously go down the list. But if I'm just like viewer audience, step outside mode.
Yeah.
I thought it was good.
I like Man of Steel.
Yeah, Man of Steel, I thought it was good.
Man of Steel, I've said over and over again, the best parts of Man of Steel are the scenes when he's not Superman. When he's not Superman.
Yeah.
It's the scenes when he's a kid or Clark Kent with Kevin Costner. Those are all the scenes I like. Yeah. And then when he's fighting Zod, I check out after 5 minutes. Actually, and all the scenes with Diane Lane are pretty great.
Yeah,
too.
Well, that's because you're in love with Diane Lane. What I love is that Christopher Nolan and Wally Pfister are at the camera for every single shot in the entire film.
They don't use second units.
They don't use second units on a movie that costs almost $500 million to make.
Yeah.
You don't have a second unit.
So, like, guys, for those of you who don't know, because it's not like the most common thing to know what
absolutely.
That is, the second unit in a film crew is usually mm-hmm. you'll hire like an assistant director, the second AD, or the second, especially in these big ones, they'll go do the action scenes for you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say there's a motorcycle chase where guys have helmets on.
It's like stunt crew and
yeah, a lot of that stuff gets shot in a, say like another location that the director's not going to go to because there's so much coverage the director has to get. Nolan insists to be there for every shot in his movies. That's unreal.
Every shot, him and Wally Pfister.
Does any other director do that?
I'm sure there's some we don't know, but this is a pretty big one for that.
Right.
Yeah, for this type of movie on this like grand of a scale to do that. Again, labor of love, man. That's why these directors are going to transcend time. That's like when we had Gavin O'Connor on the show, like everything that he talked about, you're just like, that's why you're awesome.
Yeah.
That's why I love
and
respect your
movies.
See,
that's what like being disruptive is to me, is like the people that are like, no, I know what I want. I know what I can do. Like, I like and honor that, you know? And then you demand a certain respect and like, you know, admiration. And I think that all comes from that confidence. Like, he's got to have ridiculous confidence in himself to be able to do that.
Yeah, our buddy's working on Dunkirk right now, and he said that Nolan's, like, absolutely just very specific.
Yeah.
Very specific, and that's exactly what he wants. He's, like, done it before. You can just tell. It's, like, swift.
Because he just went from working on The Revenant to Dunkirk, essentially, where you have, like, the polar opposites of directing style.
Yes.
But let's move on past that. That's not really something for us to talk about. That's writers, directors, producers. Perfect. So let's get into box office. This was produced by Warner Brothers. It cost $160 million to make.
Modest.
Yeah, very cheap, actually, considering how much it made.
How much movies cost now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did I miss the part in the last 5 or 6 years where movies just went from costing like, 160, 170 was pretty normal for a big movie to like, the big ones cost like $300, $400, $500 now?
I think it was Transformers that started to do that. I just, for some reason, I feel like that's when it started happening, was like the second Transformers.
Yeah.
When they were like, it's gonna cost $500 million to make.
Yeah, that's a thing, right? That's like,
that's
I'm not making that up. All these big ones.
Haggerty's talking about the Civil War budget for both those movies, and it is over $1 billion. I can't give a specific number, but it's over $1 billion for two movies.
Yeah, I mean, that's unbelievable. The money's...
Buy a country.
Well, I feel like that's just so interesting, because if this was made for $160, I mean, this is like an epic film with incredible, like...
Practical effects.
Incredible effects, you know, and I would choose these effects way over, I would, you know... Transformers, like
I mean, that's
so. I'm like, I'm just wondering what interesting thought.
I mean, when you talk about that kind of money, it's like, all right, if you're gonna talk about $400 or $500 million, let's just say, in our minds, we're like, there's this incredibly beautiful $3 million home in Malibu, and we want to blow it up for a shot. It's like, all right, buy it, we'll blow it up.
Buy
it's like
it.
What?
Buy
it, blow it up.
That's like actually the way you could think with a budget like that.
Absolutely,
you could just blow it up.
Well, that's like mansion. You know, our buddy just got back from shooting Furious 8, and they're like, no. When we cut a Ferrari in half, we cut a Ferrari in half.
Yeah,
you have to do it for the shot, and then we toss it. I'm like, you don't use kit cars? He's like, fuck that. You know how much money we have?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things.
Wow. That's exactly how he talks.
It's exactly how he talks, actually. So back to what we're talking about. The budget's $160 million. It came out in July of 2010. It grossed $292 million domestically, which was great, but it went nuts
worldwide.
$532 million for a gross of $825 million.
And that's just the cast, I think. I mean, Nolan's name is big worldwide, but at the point that he made this movie... His name was not synonymous with, like...
No, Christopher Nolan and even kind of Joseph Gordon-Levitt and definitely Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this
no one
is
really
like
cared about him that much.
Yeah, I mean, the Batman movies were huge, but they hadn't become... It hadn't... Because I don't think Rises was before this, right?
It was
Rises,
after.
This is between Dark Knight and Rises. So, I mean, Dark Knight had been this big thing, but, like, it's kind of crazy. I guess it's the power of Leo... I'm not really sure how this movie made so much money worldwide.
I think it's just because the people, it was one of those movies that everybody was like, you have to go see it, you have to go see it. I think the power of, like, word of mouth is still, like, the best. Yeah, you can have amazing ad campaigns, but, like, if it's not good, people aren't going to go.
I mean, if not for Titanic, this would be Leo's highest grossing movie. You know, we have Titanic as his all-time at $2.1 billion. And these are all real numbers, not adjusted.
Right, with the re-release.
Yeah, worldwide. But, I mean, yeah, with Inception, like, you're in the 600s, you know. Revenant, it's crazy that Revenant
I was just going to say, I think the fact that Revenant grossed $500 million is because, that's just because of Leo and Hardy's star power.
Yeah, at this point. I mean, yeah. Django, Wolf, Catch Me If You Can, Gatsby, Shutter Island, Departed, Aviator.
Such a gangster.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that.
So amazing.
Like, every one of those movies is great.
You're like, oh, yeah, classic, won Best Picture, classic, nominated for Best Actor. Yeah. Unreal.
So critically, this movie got an 8.8 on IMDb, which is very, very high. It's ranked number 14 of 250.
Which is as great as I think this movie is, and as much as I love it, right. And as wonderful of a masterpiece as
you
I think it is.
Too high.
Well, it's not the 14th best movie ever made. That's preposterous.
According to hundreds of thousands of people, it is.
That's ignoring like a decade. That's like decades and decades and decades of classics that won Best Picture, all like the greatest films of all time. There's how many movies have won the Oscar for Best Picture?
Look, Citizen Kane, maybe you should have came out later. yeah, no, it is very high, and I think Dark Knight is like 6 or 8 or something like that.
It's very high. It should probably be like 17.
It should, definitely. It's got an 86, 85, and a 91 by critics on Tomatoes. That's all top and audience, respectively. And I think that's fair. I really do. I really think that the 14th movie of all time is like, we're sitting here and all of us watched this movie.
The Dark Knight was?
I think it's like 8th.
Okay, so if Dark Knight is 8th, then we all just said earlier that this was even above that, so wouldn't it make sense that...
No question, Dark Knight should not be 8th on the all-time movie list.
It's because it's like one of the all-time greatest performances of all time.
Yeah,
I just said all-time like 3 times.
It's because IMDb is, those votings are largely made by younger people who see new movies and don't see older films. I mean,
yes,
that's what it comes
true.
Down to.
It's
and
very it's, true.
And the popularization of a movie like The Dark Knight... I mean, that's just case in point. That, as great as that movie is, and I love it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Steven, can we weigh in on this? It's like just
on.
Another critical voice.
Steven, as our audience knows, Ben and I always debate about the IMDb top 250 list.
As you should.
Yes. But it does fit the trend where the audience score is the highest score.
Yeah, and it makes sense.
Steven, which do you like better, Inception or Dark Knight?
Oh, damn. Probably Dark Knight.
Yeah, you think it's a better movie? Like you?
I don't think it's a better movie,
Look,
but I enjoy watching it.
He just answered your question.
More.
Why don't you leave the man alone?
No. Right? I think Inception.
We want specifics.
Inception's a better original movie. Dark Knight, as part of the trilogy, is one that I could just sit down and watch anytime. Inception, you kind of have to be like in the mood to watch.
This is a true
Inception.
Point. Yeah, it's like
point.
Really deep.
Sometimes you don't want to be mind effed. You know?
Are they two of the 14 greatest films ever made?
Clearly,
14. I mean, of all time?
Yeah.
No, I'd say Inception's probably one of the 14.
I feel like you have him pushed in a corner, and you're like hitting him.
He
just like,
said,
do you agree with me?
He just said Inception is top 14.
You can't consider Dark Knight one of the top 14 ever made because you rely on Batman Begins to create the backstory with it. So you can't say it's one of the best 14.
Thank you, Steven. We'll talk to you soon. All right, guys. Let's move on to the next part of the show. We're going to get into favorite line.
Thank you, Steven.
Let's talk favorite line, guys. This is pretty self-explanatory. Andrew, do you want to kick us off on this one?
I would. And my favorite line is from Tom Hardy to Joseph Gordon-Levitt after he says something completely condescending and rude. He goes... Your condescension, as always, is much appreciated, Arthur. Thank you.
Yeah,
I just love that line. There's just something about it that's just so... There's no one that's better at saying fuck you than Tom Hardy without actually saying it.
Yeah,
he sounds so wonderful and so nice, but
it's so deep. Yeah, that's my favorite line. That, and then honestly, calm down.
Yeah.
When he says calm down, I watched that scene like 4 times in a row. I don't know what it was about that scene, but I just love it.
What's the line he says at the end of the trailer, too, right before he...
You mustn't fear to dream a little bigger.
That's mine.
Yeah, that's a good line.
I love that.
And he fires off their grenade launcher. I like two of them. I like the monologue about the most resilient parasite is an idea, highly contagious.
Oh,
that's a great
one.
It's a really, really cool opening. It's just like sort of a fascinating. I mean, it's one of those things where like, yeah, it's true. An idea is the most resilient parasite and highly contagious. You would never think about an idea that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You would never think about it as a virus. But it's wild, that's what sort of what the whole movie's about. So I think that's really, really cool. Yeah, go ahead.
When you say something like that, there's so many things in this movie. It's like when you watch stand-up. Like, one of the things about Louis C.K. that I think people love so much is he just sits there and he's, like, self-deprecating, but it's about things that happen in real life. Mm-hmm. You know, things that we all, when he says it, you're like, oh, my God, yeah.
Right.
So when Nolan's in this movie and he's talking about dreaming and he's like, you never really understand, or you don't really notice something's weird until you wake up. Holy shit, mind blown.
Yeah.
You don't really ever remember getting anywhere in a dream, right? Holy shit, mind blown. Like, there's just little Easter eggs or gems that he throws in there of things that you don't even think about. Or he's like, I can't remember. It's like hard. It's like trying to remember a dream after you wake up, right?
Right.
It's really hard. Like, all those things, all those lines, even though they're not like, oh my God, what a crazy line, they like blew my mind.
And he does it in such a way that's not like in your face. Yeah. It's so like subtle, but you're like, whoa. You know, it's so good.
I have
a question for you guys. Have you guys ever had a dream where you literally were so terrified when you woke up from it? Like, it stayed with you? Like, something like, you know, what he's experienced?
I've had, like, a number of dreams where I wake up and it's, like, it's one of those things where it was so close to the surface that you're just, like, you can't quite decide for the rest of the day if it actually happened.
Yeah.
If you forget, if, like, did that happen and I just forgot it? Like, three or four times throughout the day, you kind of check back and you realize that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that trip me up, yeah.
Yeah, I've had ones where I've woken up and I've been, like, heartbroken or, like, sad or angry. Terrified, not really, but I remember having one specifically a while, like, about a month ago that still to this day, it affected me so greatly when I woke up. I just woke up and I started crying.
Huh.
It was crazy.
That's nuts. And I think what's really interesting for me is, so when I was growing up, I used to have like a reoccurring nightmare that I got eaten by sharks. And and what's just so really funny that I did a shark movie.
Yeah.
I had like faced my fears. But it was interesting because I was always told, you know, you're, at least I've been told, you're not really supposed to watch yourself die or watch yourself get eaten. You know what I mean? Like, you always wake up right before. Well, I just had this reoccurring one that was like, and I'd watched it both from third person and from like being inside, like of me, and it happened. You know what I mean?
It
like
happened.
I would watch, eaten up, blackout, and then I wouldn't wake up till it. And I literally was just, it was crazy. So
I don't think I've ever died in a dream.
It's nuts.
I've had like a handful recently where, you guys know how like that feeling in a dream where you're like moving really slowly and you're trying to get words out, they won't come out.
Oh, it's the worst.
And you're trying to scream.
Yes.
I've had a couple recently where I was like in the dream, like trying to yell, and then like woke up and was like,
ah! Yeah. I had that one time, and I think it was after we had the earthquake here a while ago. I remember being so terrified that I had that dream. I remember being stuck in my dream, and I was like
frozen,
just
helpless.
But I could feel myself wanting to get out of it so bad that I literally screamed and jumped out of bed, ran into my roommate's room and just like grabbed her. It was really intense.
Yeah.
But like, what is that? That's what I want to know. Like, what is that?
What I want to know is the dream analyst that's watching the show right now is like, these people are fucked
crazy.
Up. Those all mean really bad things.
All right, we also have good dreams.
We do. I do. Can't talk about this.
So guys, I want to keep moving through the show.
Yes,
before we get to the AMA question of the day, which was submitted by Josh Ryan, and that question is, this sneakily one of the all-time greatest movie casts, which will be an interesting one to debate. I want to talk about just Leo's greatest performances. We sort of breezed by it because we were doing the Nolan top three, but I think it's like an important one to talk about because we did sort of go through how many great things he's done. I will say, Rachel, you should start us off this
one. All right. Well, you know, we were talking about this before the show. I think there's too many for me to pick my top three. Like, I mean, Titanic. It's like, you can't. I remember watching that movie. I will always love that movie. If I ever watch it again, I always stop it before it gets really sad, though. Like, I just watch it
too much. Yeah.
Just too much at the end. But the whole beginning is, like, amazing. And then, I mean, obviously Inception is, like, so good. Absolutely. One of my favorite. I mean, it's probably the top. But, I mean, Catch Me If You Can was, like, so fun. And that's a movie that I would just want to watch again and again. Wolf on Wall Street, like, I loved. I mean, I could probably just keep going on the list.
I think Catch Me If You Can,
that one almost made my list.
It's like, that'd be like fourth or fifth for me. And that's funny too, because it's like, it's a very fun movie. It's so Spielberg, but it, like, it's more watchable than most of the movies that I like of his. Like, it's more rewatchable than most of the good movies that DiCaprio's done.
Yeah.
I would put it, it's not more rewatchable than the three that I have.
Okay.
Which, in my opinion, are The Departed, which is so fucking rewatchable.
I've watched that
so good.
Twice this month.
Yeah. That movie, you talk about editing, innovative editing.
Yeah.
That movie is the fucking fastest paced, just
so
brilliantly
good.
Edited. Yeah.
That movie's unbelievable.
Scorsese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
like Scorsese in his 70s, just reinventing the wheel again.
Killing.
So Departed for me is there. I go, what was the second one I wrote down? Did I write down Revenant? Yeah, you know what? I'm actually going to strike Revenant from the record. I'm going to go Wolf of Wall Street after Departed. And I will say Catch Me If You Can.
You said my whole list.
I'm going to say Catch Me If You Can, Wolf of Wall Street, Departed. I would have said Revenant, but now the more I think about it, it's like as great of a role as it was, I didn't really like that movie that much. I thought it was good.
Yeah. Wait, which one? Wolf?
No, Revenant.
Revenant.
I love Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, dude, I rewatched Revenant a few days ago, so I'm going to jump with mine. Revenant, definitely. Departed and Wolf of Wall Street were my original three. You used all of them, and you took out Wolf of Wall Street.
So I'm surprised Inception isn't up there for you guys.
It's so crazy because Leo has this thing, and so it's like Departed and Inception are a very similar character.
Yeah.
That kind of struggling, tormented guy that's trapped in this reality that he doesn't want to be in. So that's why I think those kind of go hand in hand. I think Departed and Inception are basically the same character. The other one that I really love, but I took him out because it's also the same character, is the Gangs of New York. Again, he's in with a gang that he doesn't want to be in. He's trapped there, and he's struggling between a father figure that he loves and a father figure he wants to kill. So
Gangs for me is the ultimate.
You don't like Gangs of New York.
No, but I love Bill the Butcher more than almost any character ever.
Right.
He's like I like Bill the Butcher. That's my favorite Daniel Day-Lewis character.
Really?
Yeah. It's my number one. But I don't particularly like DiCaprio in that movie, and I don't particularly like the movie. I just love Bill the Butcher. I watched the movie just for his scenes. Yeah.
Aviator is another one I just remember, too. I mean, that's another.
Yeah.
I never saw J. Edgar, which I heard he was good in it.
I never saw it either.
All right. So let's move on to our AMA question of the day, since that's kind of following this immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Is this sneakily one of the greatest all-time movie casts?
And that is by Josh Ryan Sports on Twitter,
who always asks great questions.
Yep. I think if you go down the line, it's hard to make that argument because a lot of the people in this movie are great but also very young. Whereas when we talked about Ronin, it was like you're looking at De Niro and Jean Reno, and you're looking at like Stellan Skarsgård, and you're looking at like all these people that have these like super, super stacked resumes.
Right.
Just great movie after great movie after great movie.
I'm going to 100% disagree with you.
Okay, go ahead.
I think this is probably the greatest movie cast of all time, and I think that everyone that is a star or co-star in this film will win an Academy Award or already has in their career.
All right.
You got Cotillard, Kane, and Leo, who have all won.
Yep.
You've got... Has Watanabe been nominated?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so is Hardy.
Yep.
JGL will get nominated or win at some point in his career.
Yeah.
Like, that's my point. I mean, look at that.
Everyone
I just said, Ellen Page might. Well, she did get nominated for Juno, didn't she?
Don't think she got an actress. I think I got a writing.
Maybe it's a global.
Yeah.
Or a Golden Globe.
A global.
And then Cillian Murphy. Like, they're all. Yeah. This is an incredible cast.
Is the word out on that?
You.
It's pronounced Cillian, not Cillian. I never.
You say you agree?
I agree with you, yeah. I do agree.
The word's out. It is Cillian. That's like.
I'm pretty positive it's Cillian Murphy.
I've never heard any consistency
from
anyone.
Voice of All Knowing?
Steven?
Steven, do you know? Is it Cillian Murphy?
What if it's Cillian Murphy? That's so
makes
lame.
Makes no sense, but it's with a C. It's hard to... Yeah? Never mind.
Thanks, Steven.
Okay.
It's Cillian Murphy.
Here we go.
All right, so we got two against one. I think this is probably one of the greatest...
I don't have a strong argument against you guys. I was just saying there's a lot of very, very strong ensembles that
Absolutely.
Come out from directors like this that I have to think like... Yeah, because like, all right, would Boogie Nights be one of the greatest
Oceans.
Of all time?
Yeah,
Oceans, I mean, movies, Magnolia.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, so it's debatable. But it has some pretty amazing actors. I do think that Tom Cruise would be phenomenal in this movie. Just to make a quick second point to Cage versus Cruise.
I want to just touch on that real quick.
I mean, don't you think that giving, like, delivering the opening monologue, like, an idea. Highly resilient. Like, don't you think that Cruise would just, like, nail it? No?
I just couldn't buy into him doing this
Yeah,
film.
I'm like...
I think he could nail
Leo.
It.
Leo.
I just wouldn't want it.
I just loved it the way it is so much. I don't want to change it.
I'm sorry, man. I take it back. I don't mean to do that to you.
What's the most dangerous disease? Anyway, so let's move on to which category this fits into. This is an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
There are three action movie categories. Totally ridiculous. Those movies like Face Off and Con Air kind of like fall apart, make you laugh the whole way through. Totally legitimate movies like Terminator 2, The Fugitive. They're very, very grounded with great performances, strong drama. They never really make you laugh unintentionally.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we use T2 as one of the examples there is maybe incorrect because I think it's like Fringe.
It might be.
But it is just so good. And then Ridiculously Legitimate, which are movies that are kind of in the middle. That's like The Rock, Speed, Point Break.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the greatest category to be in for an action movie.
For our
show, that
yes.
is.
And for me, this is just easily totally legitimate. I mean, there's no question for me. This is just a legit movie to the nines.
How you feeling over there, RBS?
I think it weighs between legitimate and ridiculously legitimate.
Interesting. What? Why?
Just because of the, like, not in like a ridiculously funny, obviously, but just like the ride that it takes you on. Like,
yeah.
I just feel like you go on such this experience that. I don't know.
I mean, get that, because a lot of the movies that are completely, totally legitimate are...
They're just, like, level. Like, this movie's got so many different things going on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could say, in the sense that I just made the point about T2, you could make the same point about this, where it's, like, so heady, it's, like, so over the top, so much sci-fi, that if you wanted to try to poke holes in it, which people do,
of course,
all the time, movies like this. You could sort of say this movie's like awesome, but it's ridiculous if you want to poke holes. So I could see it. I still say legitimate, but I can see where you come from.
I'm gonna actually have to agree with you, Bateman. I think it's totally legit. I think this movie does and feels exactly how it wants me to the entire time I'm watching it.
Yep,
that's why.
Absolutely. So, guys, the next part of the show that we would normally do is titled The Pitch.
Wow.
And this would be where we would pitch a movie for next week's episode. So we have a couple things going on. The next, like, 4 or 5 weeks are really exciting.
We got our poll.
We have a poll, which I think the two finalist movies that are going to be facing off. This was an episode we did 8 movies that we can never do on AMA.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
We put them in a bracket. And the last two that are going to be facing off are The Shawshank Redemption and The Lord of the Rings Trilogy.
Oh, my gosh, I love Shawshank.
They're both so good.
So we'll be putting those on Twitter this week so you guys can vote. But as well as those, we've got Deepwater Horizon. We've got Jack Reacher 2. We've got Magnificent Seven. We've got one other.
My director is in that movie.
Which one?
Magnificent Seven.
Who? Your director?
Yeah, the director that did Cold Moon actually is the film that's coming out in October that I'm in opposite Christopher Lloyd, and we met there.
Oh,
Christopher Lloyd. Brilliant director. His name is Griff Furst, but he also did Atomic Shark, and he's also an actor in Magnificent Seven.
What's the movie coming out with Christopher Lloyd in October?
Cold Moon.
Cold Moon.
Yeah, and that's like a suspense thriller. I play a Southern character, and that was like another dream come true for me. So
nice. Do you have a Southern accent?
Yes. Yes, I do. You'll have to watch the film.
All right. I love it.
It's honestly one of my favorite things to play. There's something about Southern characters that I just feel like something comes so alive in me that I love.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially this one, because it's a Michael McDowell script.
Cool.
He wrote it. Same guy that did Beetlejuice. Mm-hmm. And so it's such great writing. Like, it's such a great story, and fucks with your mind. Like, it's so good.
Very cool.
We will watch it. I will watch it.
Yeah, and we'll absolutely talk about it on the show. I think what we'll do is put up that poll, maybe do the winner next week, because I think the following week could be Magnificent Seven. We have, like, that run of movies is all going to be, like, directly in a row, I think. We're going to be doing all new stuff for the next month. So that's that. Go follow us on Twitter, guys, at AMA Podcast, so you can vote on the poll. Follow our awesome special guest.
Thanks, guys.
Where can they find you again, Rachel?
RachelBSmith.com.
And you guys can find me at Andrew Guy.
And you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. We will see you next week. Stephen Lemieux, thank you so much for doing the show.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.